Walter Elliot of Kellynch Hall in Somersetshire was a man who, for his own amusement, never took up any book but the baronetage. There he found occupation for an idle hour and consolation in a distressed one.
Elliot of Kellynch Hall. Walter Elliot, born March 1st, 1760, married July 15th, 1784, Elizabeth of South Park in the county of Gloucester, by which lady he has issue?
Elizabeth, now 29.
Anne, now 26.
Mary, now 22.
Persuasion by Jane Austen. Dramatised for radio in three parts by Micheline Wandor, with Juliet Stevenson as Anne Elliot, Tim Brierley as Frederick Wentworth, and Sirica Cusack as Jane Austen. Part 1, Old Friends and New Meetings.
Heir presumptive, William Walter Elliot, Esquire, a distant cousin.
At 54, Sir Walter Elliot was still a very fine man. And indeed, he believed himself and Elizabeth as blooming as ever amidst the wreck of the good looks of everybody else.
Anne is haggard, Mary is coarse, and the rapid increase of the crow's foot about Lady Russell's temples has long been a distress to me.
Lady Russell had been the intimate friend of Lady Elliot.
Mary has acquired a little artificial importance through her marriage.
Married December 16th, 1810, Charles, son and heir of Charles Musgrove, Esquire, of Uppercross in the county of Somerset.
And Anne? Well, Anne is only Anne.
To Lady Russell, however, Anne was a most dear and highly valued goddaughter, favourite and friend.
I love all three girls, but it is only in Anne that I can fancy the mother to revive again.
Anne's bloom vanished early. I have no hope of ever reading her name in any other page of my favourite work. No, every quality of alliance must rest with Elizabeth.
Since her mother's death 13 years before, Elizabeth had been mistress of Kellynch Hall.
I would so rejoice to be certain of being properly solicited by Baronet Blood within the next 12 months or so. Father, please put the book away.
I suppose I must.
Why are you sighing, Father?
I'm sighing at the prospect of having to deal with the bills of my tradespeople. We must retrench, Elizabeth.
Are you serious?
Indeed. Does it occur to you, my dear, that there is any one article in which we can retrench?
Well, we can refrain from you furnishing the drawing room.
I fear that will not be enough.
We could take no presents down to Anne.
Yes, that is possible, but I fear that too is insufficient.
Well, I can think of nothing more, Father, without compromising our dignity.
My very sentiments. Oh, Elizabeth, if only you had married your cousin William Elliot.
I confess I found my cousin extremely agreeable. But despite being encouraged, he never arrived to visit Kellynch Hall.
Indeed. He united himself to a rich woman of far inferior birth. However, Elizabeth, you are wearing black ribbons for his wife.
Father, there is not a baronet from A to Z whom my feelings could have so willingly acknowledged as my equal. But he cannot be pardoned.
I suppose not. I fear I shall have to call in Mr. Shepherd to advise us. Oh, dear.
Mr. Shepherd, Sir Walter's agent, a cautious lawyer, deferred to the excellent judgment of Lady Russell, who, in her turn, deferred to the judgment of another.
And so, Anne, I have decided to consult you.
Well, Lady Russell, I think Father must clear away the claims of his creditors as soon as possible. I feel this is a duty. And then there are the horses.
What about the horses, Anne?
He must dispose of both pairs of horses.
But Anne, your father is a baronet.
Father will not be lessened in the eyes of sensible people. He will only be doing what very many of our first families have done.
Well, I'm a little nervous of putting these things to him.
Lady Russell, if anyone can persuade Father, you can.
What? Every comfort of life knocked off?
Well, not every comfort, Sir Walter.
Journeys, London, servants, horses, restrictions everywhere. What do you think, Mr. Shepherd?
Well, Sir Walter...
I would sooner quit Kellynch Hall at once than remain in it on such disgraceful terms.
Why, Sir Walter, what an idea! Still, you know best about quitting Kellynch Hall.
What?
Well, you could not possibly alter your style of living in your own house. You have to move.
And where should I go?
Well, Sir Walter, there is Bath.
Oh, Lady Russell, not Bath.
Oh, be quiet, Anne. This does not concern you.
Or another house in the country?
Yes, a house in your own neighbourhood, where you will still be near Mary and have my society.
Bath is only 50 miles from Kellynch, and I spend some part of every winter there.
I dislike Bath, Lady Russell.
It is a mere prejudice, Anne. A larger society will improve your spirits.
No, it is quite impossible. I could not bear the degradation of being known to design letting my house.
We could advertise very discreetly.
Advertise? Please do not mention that word. I forbid it. If I am spontaneously solicited by some most unexceptionable applicant, on my terms and as a great favour, I will consider letting Kellynch Hall. Ah, Elizabeth, my dear, I need your judgment.
On what, Father?
And Mrs. Clay. Oh, do come in and help us.
If I can, Sir Walter.
Lady Russell had another reason for wishing that Sir Walter and Elizabeth would remove to Bath. Elizabeth had been lately forming an intimacy with Mrs. Clay, a daughter of Mr. Shepherd, who had returned after an unprosperous marriage. Lady Russell believed Mrs. Clay had designs upon Sir Walter.
May I observe, Sir Walter, that the present juncture is much in our favour. Now that we have peace, all our rich naval officers will be coming ashore wanting a home. Now, if a rich officer were to come our way...
He will be a very lucky man, Shepherd, eh? What do you think, Mrs. Clay?
I quite agree with my father that a sailor might be a very desirable tenant. I have known a good deal of the profession.
The Navy have done so much for us, Father.
Oh, the profession has its utility, but I should be sorry to see any friend of mine belonging to it.
And why is that, Father?
It is the means of bringing persons of obscure birth into undue distinction. And it cuts up a man's youth and vigour most horribly.
The sea is no beautifier, certainly. But then, is it not the same with many other professions?
It is only the lot of those who are not obliged to follow any profession who can live in the country and hold the blessings of health and of good appearance.
Very true, Mrs. Clay, very true.
I do know of an admiral.
What did you say? An admiral?
An Admiral Croft.
And who is he?
He was in the Trafalgar action and has been in the East Indies since.
Then I take it for granted that his face is about as orange as the cuffs and capes of my livery.
Admiral Croft is a little weather-beaten, to be sure, but he's quite the gentleman. He happens by sheer chance to be wanting a comfortable home as soon as possible.
Is he a married man?
Yes, and without children.
Have you seen Mrs. Croft?
Oh, indeed. Oh, very well-spoken, genteel and shrewd lady. In fact, she is sister to a gentleman who lived amongst us once. Now, bless me, what was his name? He came to consult me about a trespass of one of his neighbours.
You mean Mr. Wentworth, I suppose?
The very man. He had the curacy of Monkford, you know, Sir Walter, some time back.
Oh, Mr. Wentworth, the curate of Monkford. Ah, you misled me by the term gentleman.
Well, at any rate, Admiral Croft is certainly a gentleman.
Admiral Croft, eh? I have let my house to Admiral Croft. That sounds extremely well. Very much better than to a mere mister. Elizabeth, my dear, you're very silent.
I'm very happy with the plan, Father.
Excellent. Mr. Shepherd, you are empowered to act on my behalf.
Splendid. Anne? Oh, where's Anne gone?
Anne had left the room without anyone noticing, to seek the comfort of cool air for her flushed cheeks.
A few months more, and he may perhaps be walking here.
He was not Mr. Wentworth, the former curate of Monkford, but his brother, Captain Frederick Wentworth, a remarkably fine young man, with a great deal of intelligence, spirit, and brilliancy. They met when Anne was an extremely pretty girl of 19, with gentleness, modesty, taste, and feeling, and an attachment rapidly developed between them.
Lady Russell! Frederick! Captain Wentworth and I would like to be engaged.
But he has no fortune.
He is very confident that he will soon be rich.
Anne Elliot, you cannot throw yourself away on a young man who has the most uncertain profession and no connections worth speaking of.
Sir Walter was no more accommodating.
It would be churlish of me to withhold my consent, but I'm sure that it would be a very degrading alliance.
A most unfortunate alliance, Sir Walter. How right you are.
But Lady Russell! Father, he is brilliant!
He is headstrong.
Anne might have been able to withstand her father's ill will, but she could not resist Lady Russell, whom she had always loved, and she allowed herself to be persuaded.
It will be for his good, Anne. You must think of him.
Do you really believe so?
Oh, yes. It is for his advantage. That should be some consolation for you.
I suppose so, Lady Russell.
A few months saw the beginning and end of their acquaintance, and Anne's early loss of bloom and spirits were the lasting effect.
7 years. I wonder if he has changed.
Since that time, Captain Wentworth had distinguished himself, gained rank, and made a handsome fortune.
I wonder if he will see me changed.
While Anne mused and wondered, matters of business were being completed. Admiral Croft reported to his wife, Sophia.
The baronet will never set the Thames on fire, but there seems no harm in him.
And Sir Walter reported to his family.
The Admiral will never set the Thames on fire, but there seems no harm in him.
They were to take possession at Michaelmas, and Elizabeth and Sir Walter were to remove to Bath in the preceding month. When Elizabeth and Sir Walter travelled to Bath, Anne removed to stay with her sister Mary. Uppercross Cottage was delightful, with its veranda and French windows. Mary was lying on the faded sofa of the pretty little drawing room, the once elegant furniture of which had been gradually growing shabby under the influence of 4 summers and 2 children.
I am so ill I can hardly speak. I have not seen a creature the whole morning.
I am sorry to find you unwell.
I do not think I was ever so ill in my life.
Where is Charles?
Oh, Charles is out shooting. I have not seen him since 7 o'clock. He would go, though I told him how ill I was.
Well, you'll soon be better now. Let me help you sit up.
Oh.
There. How are your neighbours at the Great House?
I have not seen one of them today. Except Mr. Musgrove, who stopped and spoke through the window, but without getting off his horse. And not one of the Miss Musgroves has been near me.
It is early.
Oh, I never want them, I assure you. They talk and laugh a great deal too much for me. Well, you've not asked me one word about our dinner at the Pools yesterday.
Oh, did you go then?
Oh, yes, I went. I was very well yesterday.
Was it a pleasant party?
Nothing remarkable.
Did Mr. and Mrs. Musgrove take you?
Yes. I was crowded in the back seat. I think it very likely that my illness today may be owing to it.
Would you like another cushion?
Oh, thank you very much. I think I might be able to leave the sofa by dinner time.
Perhaps after lunch we might take a little walk.
But where shall we go? I suppose you will not like to call at the Great House before they've been to see you.
Oh, I should never stand on ceremony with people I know so well as the Musgroves.
Well, as my sister, they ought to call upon you as soon as possible. However, We may as well go and sit with them for a little while.
To the great house, accordingly, they went, to sit a full half hour in the old-fashioned square parlour with its small carpet and shining floor. The Musgroves had a numerous family, but the only two grown up, excepting Charles, were Henriette and Louisa, young ladies of 19 and 20, who had brought from a school in Exeter all the usual stock of accomplishments, and were now, like thousands of other young ladies, living to be fashionable, happy, and merry.
Our dress has every advantage.
Our faces are rather pretty.
Our spirits extremely good.
Our manners unembarrassed and pleasant.
Anne believed them to be the happiest creatures of her acquaintance.
I do envy them their perfect understanding, that good-humoured mutual affection of which I have known so little myself with either of my sisters.
Why, Anne, how good to see you.
Please come in, Anne.
Louisa, Anne must see my new sketches.
Henrietta, I must show Anne my embroidery first.
Anne, you must play for us.
Anne played a great deal better than either of the Miss Musgroves, but having no voice and no fond parents to sit by and fancy themselves delighted, her performance was little thought of. Since the age of 14, ever since the loss of her dear mother, she had not known the happiness of being listened to, or encouraged by any just appreciation or real taste. In music, she had always been used to feel alone in the world.
The neighbourhood is not large, but we are visited by everyone.
We have more dinner parties and more callers.
More visitors by invitation and by chance than any other family.
We are more completely popular.
We are wild for dancing. Come and dance, Anne.
No, I prefer to play.
One of the least agreeable circumstances of Anne's residence was her being entreated with too much confidence by both Mary and Charles.
I could manage the children very well if it were not for Mary's interference.
Oh, Anne, Charles spoils the children so that I cannot get them into any order.
I wish you could persuade Mary not to be always fancying herself ill.
I do believe that if Charles were to see me dying, he would not think there was anything the matter with me.
So passed the first 3 weeks. The Crofts took possession of Kellynch Hall with true naval alertness on September 29th. And within days, they called on Charles and Mary Musgrove.
Oh, how delightful! Admiral and Mrs. Croft!
Mrs. Musgrove!
Mrs. Croft had bright dark eyes, good teeth, and an agreeable face, though her reddened and weather-beaten complexion made her seem to have lived some years longer in the world than her real 38.
It must be you, Miss Anne, and not your sister, I find, that my brother had the pleasure of being acquainted with.
Oh, I'm not sure. Your brother?
Perhaps you may not have heard that he is married.
I had not indeed heard that he was married.
Yes, yes, he is. To a charming young lady, most suitable.
There was nothing in Mrs. Croft's words to explain which Mr. Wentworth it was of whom she spoke.
We are expecting Mrs. Croft's brother here soon. I expect you know him by name.
Oh, yes, I do believe that we do, Admiral Croft. Mr. Wentworth, is it not?
Yes, indeed. Ah.
Anne heard no more. The name Wentworth filled all her mind, and it took some time to recover her composure. Louisa and Henrietta called the following day.
We have come with the most exciting piece of news.
And to give you notice that Mama is out of spirits. She is thinking so much of poor Richard.
The Musgroves had had the ill fortune of a troublesome son, and the good fortune to lose him before he reached his 20th year. He was a sailor and had been stupid and unmanageable on shore. He had been very little cared for at any time by his family, and scarcely at all regretted when the intelligence of his death reached Uppercross 2 years before.
Tell us your news, Louisa. Mrs. Croft's brother, Captain Wentworth, is just returned to England and has come to see them most directly.
Captain Wentworth? Did you say?
And Mama thought that Wentworth was the name of poor Richard's captain.
He was 6 months on board Captain Frederick Wentworth's frigate, the Laconia. And from there he wrote only 2 letters to Mama and Papa. Oh.
Apart from all the others asking for money.
Did your brother speak of his captain?
Oh,
Oh, yes, he spoke well of his captain in his letters.
Mama is so eager to thank Captain Wentworth for his kindness to poor Dick that she has invited him to call on us today.
And now we must hurry back. Mama will wonder where we are.
Oh, but Louisa...
Come along, Henrietta. No.
We shall call in on our afternoon walk, Anne. Then we might be invited to stay. And we can meet Captain Wentworth.
But Mary,
Oh, a walk is very good for me. You told me so yourself.
I am tired. I do not wish to walk today.
Nonsense.
Well, I shall need my gloves and I cannot recall where they are.
It is warm, Anne. You will not need your gloves.
Oh, dear, what now?
I'll go and see, Mary.
Oh, dear, what on earth has happened? Mary, do come quickly. Little Charles has fallen. I do believe he has hurt himself.
Oh, Jemima can deal with him.
He's calling for you, Mary. You must come.
Oh, very well.
Oh, dear.
Oh, I shall faint. I cannot bear the sight of blood, neither my own nor anyone else's.
Oh, Mary.
Oh, Anne, what shall we do?
Now calm yourself, Mary. We must send somebody to find Charles.
Oh,
sit down. There, little one. And we must send for the apothecary and come and examine the child.
Oh, I cannot bear to look at him. And Mr. Robinson will not be here in time for us to go to the great house.
Mary, you cannot leave your son at such a time as this.
Oh, no, I suppose not. Oh, dear. I must go and lie down. And do call me when Mr. Robinson is beaten.
How is he, Anne?
He's sleeping, Charles. Mr. Robinson was marvellous. He was so tender with the child.
I'm glad that nothing is broken.
Oh, Mary, where were you?
You missed him, you missed him.
We are perfectly delighted with him.
He is so much handsomer and so much more agreeable than any individual among our male acquaintance.
When Papa invited him to stay to dinner, we were so glad.
And we were so sorry when he said it was out of his power.
And we were so glad again when he found in reply to Papa and Mama's pressing invitations that he could dine with us after all.
And he dined with us.
And he had so pleasant a manner.
And he looked and said everything with such exquisite grace,
we assure you.
Our heads were quite turned by him.
Of whom are you speaking?
Why, of Captain Wentworth, whom else?
Mary, you must come and meet him.
Oh, but you could not leave little Charles, could you? We heard.
Of course not. Mary must stay here.
But you could come, Charles, could you not?
Come then, Louisa, we shall be late.
Yes, we must dress for dinner.
The child is going on well, Anne. You said so. I wish very much to be introduced to Captain Wentworth.
Oh, you will not dine from home, Charles?
No, I shall dine here with you and Anne, but I might walk in for half an hour.
Indeed, Charles, I cannot bear to have you go away, even for 5 minutes. Only think if anything should happen.
Well, little Charles is sleeping. There is absolutely nothing here for me to do. I ought to go.
It will not look right if you meet Captain Wentworth without me.
Mary, I shall stay with you.
Quite right. Your sister being with you, my love, I have no scruple at all. You would not like to leave the boy yourself, but you can see I can be of no use.
I can see, Charles, that you are quite determined on going.
Then I shall go and dress.
So, you and I are to be left to shift by ourselves with this poor, sick child.
Mary, I cannot wonder at your husband.
If there is anything disagreeable going on, men are always sure to get out of it. And Charles is as bad as any of them.
But nursing does not belong to a man. It is not his province.
Oh, and because I am the poor mother, I am not allowed to stir. Yet I am sure I am more unfit than anybody else to be about the child. You saw how hysterical I was.
That was only the effect of the shock.
Well, I hope I am as fond of my child as any mother, but I do not know that I am any more use in a sick room than Charles. I have not got the nerves for that sort of thing.
But could you be comfortable to be spending the whole evening away from the poor boy?
Yes. Yes, Papa can. Why should not I?
Well, suppose you were to go. Leave little Charles to my care.
Oh, dear me, that's a very good thought. Very good indeed. But to be sure, I may just as well go as not, for I'm of no use at home, am I?
Yes, do go, Mary.
Oh, you, who have not a mother's feeling, are a great deal the properest person.
Then it is settled.
Oh, I should not go, you may be sure, if I did not feel quite at ease about my child. Oh, Charles, Anne has been persuading me that I ought to go with you to meet Captain Wentworth.
Indeed?
Yes.
She says I am of no more use at home than you are, and undertakes to stay at home and take care of little Charles. It is Anne's own proposal.
That is very kind of Anne.
You need not have any further scruples, Charles. Please, you must go, or you will be late for dinner.
Anne knew herself to be of the first utility to the child. And what was it to her if Frederick Wentworth were only half a mile distant, making himself agreeable to others?
I would like to know how Captain Wentworth might feel as to a meeting. Indifferent, perhaps.
Either indifferent or unwilling.
Had he wished to see me again, he need not have waited till this time.
Oh, it was delightful, Anne. There was music, singing, talking, laughing, all that was most agreeable.
Captain Wentworth is most charming.
Oh, no touch of shyness or reserve. Why, we all seem to know each other perfectly. And he's coming here early tomorrow to shoot with Charles.
Coming here, Mary?
After breakfast. He seemed afraid of being in my way here on account of little Charles.
He inquired after you.
Oh, yes?
Yes, indeed. By the way, my sisters will be calling with Captain Wentworth tomorrow morning to see little Charles, if that is not inconvenient.
Tomorrow morning.
A thousand feelings rushed on Anne, of which this was the most consoling, that it would soon be over. And on the morning, when they were beginning breakfast...
How delightful to see you again, Mrs. Musgrove.
Captain Wentworth, such a pleasure.
Anne's eye half met Captain Wentworth's. A bow, a curtsy passed. She heard his voice.
I'm glad the boy is improving.
Thank you. He's been very...
The room seemed full of persons and voices.
We're so pleased to have you here.
But a few minutes ended it.
Goodbye, Mrs. Musgrove. Miss Elliot.
And their visitor bowed and was gone. Within a few minutes, the room was cleared, and Anne might finish her breakfast as she could.
It is over. It is over. The worst is over.
She had seen him. They had met. They had been once more in the same room.
Almost 8 years have passed. How absurd to be resuming the agitation which such an interval has banished into the distance.
But what might not 8 years do?
8 years? Nearly a third part of my own life.
Alas, with all her reasonings... To retentive feelings, 8 years may be little more than nothing.
Henrietta asked Captain Wentworth what he thought of you, and he said you were so altered that he should not have known you again.
He was not altered. I have seen the same Frederick Wentworth.
The years which had destroyed her youth and bloom had only given him a more glowing, manly, open look.
So altered, he should not have known me again? I rejoice that I have heard those words. They are of a sobering tendency.
Frederick Wentworth had not forgiven Anne Elliot. He felt she had deserted, disappointed him, and worse, shown a feebleness of character in doing so. She had given him up to oblige others. It was the effect of over-persuasion. It was weakness and timidity. It was now Captain Wentworth's object to marry.
Well, Frederick, are you ready to settle now?
Yes, so far. I'm quite ready to make a foolish match. Anybody between 15 and 30 may have me for the asking.
Well, there are both the Miss Musgroves, Louisa and Henrietta.
I have a heart for either of the Miss Musgroves. A little beauty, a few smiles, a few compliments to the Navy, and I'm a lost man.
Be serious. Describe the woman with whom you would wish to meet.
I shall be serious, dear Sophia. The woman I really wish to meet must have a strong mind with sweetness of manner.
And Anne Elliot was not out of his thoughts. From this time, Captain Wentworth and Anne Elliot were repeatedly in the same circle. Former times must undoubtedly be brought to the recollection of each. The year of their engagement could not but be named by him in the little narratives or descriptions that conversation called forth.
Ah, that happened before I went to sea, in the year 1806.
And though his voice did not falter, and though she had no reason to suppose his eye wandering towards her while he spoke...
It must be utterly impossible that he should be unvisited by remembrance, any more than I am.
There had been a time when no two hearts were so open, no tastes so similar, no feelings so in unison, no countenances so beloved. Now they were as strangers.
Captain Wentworth, what do sailors eat on board?
Why, food, Miss Louisa.
But if they're so busy taking themselves to sea, who will cook and dress the meat?
The cook on board.
No. Really?
Yes, Miss Louisa. Really.
Oh, Miss Anne. If it had pleased heaven to spare my poor son Richard, I dare say he would have been just such another as Captain Wentworth.
I dare say he would, Mrs. Musgrove.
You would have liked him, Admiral.
I'm sure I should, Mrs. Musgrove.
We have a navy list here, Captain Wentworth. Can you find us out all the ships which you have commanded?
Frederick's first ship was the Ask.
Very well, Mrs. Croft. We will look for the Ask.
Oh, you will not find her there. Quite worn out and broken up before I went to the West Indies.
The West Indies? Why, where are they?
A long way away.
Never was a better sloop than the Asp in her day. Lucky fellow to get her.
I felt my luck, Admiral Croft, I assure you.
Well, to be sure you did. What should a young fellow like you do ashore for half a year together? If a man has not a wife, he soon wants to be afloat again.
We cannot find the Laconia. Captain Wentworth, do help us.
Show me the volume. Ah, here she is. Those were pleasant days when I had the Laconia.
I am sure, sir. It was a lucky day for us when you were put captain into that ship. We shall never forget what you did.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Musgrove.
My brother, Captain Wentworth.
Mama is thinking of poor Richard.
Poor dear fellow. He was growing so steady and such an excellent correspondent while he was under your care.
There was a momentary expression in Captain Wentworth's face, a certain glance of his bright eye and curl of his handsome mouth, which convinced Anne that instead of sharing in Mrs. Musgrove's kind wishes as to her son, he had probably been at some pains to get rid of him.
Captain Wentworth, do come and sit by me so that we can talk further about poor Dick.
But the sofa...
Miss Anne can find a little more space on her side.
Oh, indeed, I can leave the sofa to you and Captain
Nonsense,
Wentworth.
Nonsense, Miss Anne, there's enough room for us all three. There. Come and sit by me, Captain Wentworth.
If you insist, Mrs. Musgrove.
I do indeed.
Captain Wentworth should be allowed some credit for the self-command with which he attended to Mrs. Musgrove's large, fat sighings over the destiny of her son, whom alive nobody had cared for. But the large, bulky figure has as good a right to be in deep affliction as the most graceful set of limbs in the world.
Captain Wentworth, if you had been a week later in Lisbon last spring, you would have been asked to give a passage to Lady Mary Grierson and her daughters.
I am glad that I was not a week later then.
Come, come, Frederick. You want gallantry.
I would never admit willingly any ladies on board a ship of mine, excepting for a ball or a visit. Women cannot be comfortable on board ship.
Oh, Frederick, women may be as comfortable on board as in the best house in England. I believe I've lived as much on board as most women.
You were living with your husband and were the only woman on board.
But you yourself brought Mrs. Harville, her sister, her cousin, and her three children round from Portsmouth to Plymouth.
Captain Harville was a brother officer.
Depend upon it, they were all perfectly comfortable.
Such a number of women and children have no right to be comfortable on board.
I hate to hear you talking as if women were all fine ladies instead of rational creatures. We none of us expect to be in smooth water all our days. Is that not so, Miss Anne?
Well, Mrs. Croft...
Ah, my dear, when he has a wife, he will sing a different tune.
Now I have done. When once married people begin to attack me with, oh, you will think very differently when you are married, I can only say, no, I shall not, and then they say again, yes, you will, and there is an end of it.
Captain Wentworth, stop talking so seriously and come over here. I want you to turn my music for me.
Certainly, Miss Louisa. Excuse me.
What a great traveller you must have been, Mrs. Croft. I've crossed the Atlantic four times and have been once to the East Indies and back again. I do not know where any of these places are, I'm sure. And I do assure you, ma'am, that nothing can exceed the accommodations of a man of war. I suppose not. I can safely say that the happiest part of my life has been spent on board a ship. I do not think I have ever been on board a ship. Does not one feel dreadfully ill? A little disordered the first 24 hours of going to sea, but I never knew what sickness was afterwards. Dear me. The only time that I ever really suffered in body or mind, the only time I ever fancied myself unwell or had any ideas of danger,
was the winter that I passed by myself at Deal, when the Admiral, Captain Croft then, was in the North Sea.
Why, what is so dangerous at Deal?
I lived in perpetual fright and had all manner of imagining complaints from not knowing what to do with myself or when I should hear from him next. But as long as we could be together, nothing ever ailed me, and I never met with the smallest inconvenience.
I am quite of your opinion, Mrs. Croft. There is nothing so bad as a separation.
Do stop talking, Mama. We want to dance, and Captain Wentworth is ready. Anne, will you play for us?
Willingly.
Come along then, Anne, since I desire nothing more than to dance.
Yes, very good.
It was a merry, joyous party, and no one seemed in higher spirits than Captain Wentworth. Both Henrietta and Louisa seemed so entirely occupied by him that it was no wonder that he was a little spoiled by such universal, such eager admiration.
Is he looking at me? I'm sure I can feel him looking at me. I'm sure I can feel him observing my altered features, trying perhaps to trace in them the ruins of the face which had once charmed him.
Does Miss Elliot never dance?
Oh, no, never. She has quite given up dancing. She would rather play. She is never tired of playing.
Never tired of playing. Oh, no, I never tire of playing.
Anne was not the only one disturbed by Captain Wentworth's presence. There was also Charles Hayter, a cousin of the Musgroves. He had a curacy in the neighbourhood and lived at his father's house at Winthrop. There had been some considerable attachment between Charles Hayter and Henrietta, and Charles was eager to obtain the curacy of Uppercross.
Louisa, Henrietta, I've just had the most promising conversation with Dr. Shirley.
Henrietta, Captain Wentworth should have been here by now, should he not?
Indeed, Louisa. Charles, what was that you said?
I was speaking of the curacy with Dr. Shirley.
Oh, indeed. I always thought you would have it. I always thought you sure. I have always known that Dr. Shirley must have a curate, and you have secured his promise. Is Captain Wentworth coming, Louisa?
The subject of Captain Wentworth's preference was meanwhile much discussed at Uppercross Cottage.
Mary, which of my sisters is preferred by Captain Wentworth, do you think?
Oh, I think he prefers Henrietta, certainly.
No. I do believe it is Louisa. What do you think, Anne?
Henrietta is perhaps the prettiest, but Louisa has the higher spirits. Do you think he would be suitable for either?
Well, Captain Wentworth says he has made more than £20,000 by the war.
Indeed, £20,000.
It would be a capital match.
Oh, upon my word, it would. Dear me. If he should ever be made a baronet. Lady Wentworth sounds very well. That would be a noble thing indeed for Henrietta.
Oh, Louisa.
Oh, Sir Frederick and Lady Wentworth. It would be but a new creation, however, and I never think much of your new creations.
Do not be so sure that it is Henrietta.
Oh, it is. She's definitely the one preferred.
You're not, by any chance, influenced by your disapproval of Charles Hayter as a possible match for Henrietta?
Pray, who is Charles Hayter? Nothing but a country curate.
Well, I cannot agree with you here, Mary. I have a regard for my cousin. When my uncle dies, Charles Hayter steps into very pretty property.
What property is that?
The estate at Winthrop, and a farm near Taunton, which is some of the best land in the country.
I suppose that is true.
Good freehold property. No, no. Henrietta might do worse than marry Charles Hayter. And if Louisa can get Captain Wentworth, I shall be very well satisfied.
One morning, shortly after this conversation, Captain Wentworth walked unexpectedly into the drawing-room at the cottage.
Oh. Excuse me.
Excuse me.
I thought the Miss Musgroves had been here.
Indeed, Captain Wentworth, they are.
Mrs. Musgrove told me I should find them here.
They're upstairs with my sister. They will be down in a few moments, I dare say. I can go and tell them that you're here.
No, 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 please. Do not trouble yourself. I hope the little boy is better now.
Oh, little Charles is almost completely back to his old self.
I see that.
Oh, Miss Elliot, I've come to see... Oh, Captain Wentworth.
Good day, Mr. Hayter.
Good day, Captain Wentworth.
How do you do, Mr. Hayter? Will you not sit down? The others will be here presently.
Thank you.
Have you walked from the vicarage?
Yes. May I look at your newspaper, Miss Elliot?
Oh, it is not my newspaper, but of course, please do.
Thank you.
Is it far from the vicarage?
Far? Oh, no. Not far. Not at all far.
I see. Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad you like me. Oh, Anne! Captain Wentworth. Do forgive me. I was showing Miss Louisa and Miss Henrietta the fabric for the new curtains.
Captain Wentworth, you are here.
You are here, Captain Wentworth, already.
I am here too, Henrietta.
Why, there you are, Mr. Hayter.
Henrietta.
Not now, Charles. I'm busy.
We have decided to go for a walk, everyone.
Oh, a very long walk. And we have concluded, therefore, that Mary, you could not like to go with us.
Oh, but I should like to join you very much. I am very fond of a long walk.
Perhaps you should not overexert yourself.
Nonsense, nonsense. I'm not at all tired. I've not walked for 2 days.
Anne, you will accompany us, will you not?
Oh, yes, I will indeed.
I cannot imagine why they should suppose I should not like a long walk.
Oh, why, Charles,
we're just setting off on a long walk.
Excellent, I shall accompany you. Captain Wentworth, you will join the party.
Yes, indeed.
Could Anne have foreseen such a juncture, she would have stayed at home.
Come along then, everyone. We shall guide you.
In the ensuing bustle, no one observed that Charles Hayter had slipped away. Anne's object was not to be in the way of anybody, and where the narrow paths across the fields made many separations necessary, to keep with Mary and Charles.
Mind the water, everyone!
Her pleasure in the walk must arise from the exercise and the day, and from the view of the last smiles of the year, upon the tawny leaves and withered hedges.
Look, my underskirts are wet.
Season of mists and mellow fruitfulness. Close bosom friend of the maturing sun.
But despite repeating to herself some few of the thousand poetical descriptions extant of autumn, she could not avoid hearing some of the more lively chat between Captain Wentworth and either of the Miss Musgroves.
What glorious weather. The Admiral and my sister mean to take a long drive this morning.
You know exactly where they will go?
No, but they are always together.
Oh, if I loved a man as she loves the Admiral, I would always be with him.
I honour you for that.
Oh, Anne could not immediately fall into a quotation again, and thought to engage with some more ordinary words.
Is not this path one of the ways to Winthrop? To the Hayter's house?
But nobody heard. After another half mile of gradual ascent through large enclosures, where the ploughs at work and the fresh-made paths spoke the farmer, counteracting the sweets of poetical despondence, they gained the summit of the hill and soon commanded a full view of Winthrop.
Oh, bless me, here is Winthrop. I declare I had no idea. Well, now I think we'd better turn back. I'm excessively tired.
No, no, no. We need not turn back yet. Can visit the Hayters. I cannot see Cousin Charles again today.
Yes, you can, Henrietta.
Now that we are so near, I am resolved to call on my aunt. Mary, come. We must go together.
Oh, no, Charles.
Well, think of the advantage of resting yourself a quarter of an hour at Winthrop, since you feel so tired.
No, indeed. Walking up that hill again will do me more harm than any sitting down could do me good. Oh, I shall rest here.
Very well, then. Henrietta and I will just run down for a minute to see our aunt and cousins. Come along, Henrietta.
Henrietta? Oh, very well. The rest of you can wait for us here.
Captain Wentworth, I do believe there are some nuts in this hedgerow. Come and tell me whether my eyesight is right.
Oh, dear. Stone is very hard. Most uncomfortable. Oh, Louisa, can you see a better seat near that hedge?
No, Mary, I cannot. Oh. Here they are, Captain Wentworth.
Come, Anne. I'm sure there is a better seat in the next field.
Here, Mary. Here's a nice seat on this dry, sunny bank under the hedge.
Oh, very well. Oh, no, it will not do. There is too much grass in this field. Anne, find me a more comfortable seat.
But Mary...
Oh, I insist, Anne.
Oh, very well.
Whose suggestion was it to walk towards Winthrop?
Oh, it was entirely Henrietta's idea, but I made her decide to go.
You are very sure of yourself.
You understand why I persuaded her. She had hurt Charles Hayter's feelings and needed to make amends.
I see that more than a mere dutiful morning visit to your aunt was in question. Your sister is an amiable creature, but yours is the character of decision and firmness, I can see.
That is most kind, Captain Wentworth.
Now, my first wish for all whom I am interested in is that they should be firm. If Louisa Musgrove would be beautiful and happy in her November of life, she will cherish all her present powers of mind.
Anne feared to move, lest she should be seen or heard.
Mary is good-natured enough in many respects, but she does sometimes provoke me excessively by her nonsense. She has a great deal too much of the Elliot pride.
The Elliot pride, yes.
We do so wish that Charles had married Anne instead. I suppose you know he wanted to marry Anne.
Do you mean she refused him?
Oh, yes, certainly.
When did that happen?
I do not exactly know, for Henrietta and I were at school at the time. But I do believe about a year before he married Mary.
Indeed.
I wish she had accepted him. Papa and Mama think her great friend Lady Russell persuaded Anne to refuse Charles.
That is most interesting, Miss Louisa. Mm-hmm.
There was just that degree of feeling and curiosity in Captain Wentworth's manner which gave Anne extreme agitation.
Anne, come back, do. Come back and sit by me, Anne.
I'm here, Mary. Oh,
I do believe Charles and Henrietta are returning. Is that Charles Hayter with them?
Yes, I do believe it is.
Oh, well, Henrietta looks a little ashamed and very well pleased, I fear.
And Charles Hayter looks exceedingly happy. Indeed, they seem quite devoted to each other.
Come along, everyone. Charles and I are ready to return.
Oh, help me up, someone. Anne, will you give me your hand?
Everything now marked out Louisa for Captain Wentworth. Nothing could be plainer. They walk side by side. Anne, again, hurried to join Charles and Mary.
Charles, dear, give me your arm. I'm so tired.
Dear Mary. Anne, would you take the other arm?
That is kind of you. Yes, Charles.
Oh, these nettles. Yeah, Mary, wait while I cut their heads off with my switch.
Charles, do not take your arm away.
Mary, I cannot remove the nettles without the use of my arm.
Why do you have to take my arm away?
Because you are walking on the hedge side.
Oh, Anne is not incommoded on the other side. She still has your other arm.
Excuse me, both of you.
Oh, dear, that is too bad. I shall be glad when we reach the lane.
We are by the lane already, Mary.
Admiral and Mrs. Croft, good morning to you.
Good morning!
Fire, Admiral, what a good chance.
We have been on such a long walk, and we have visited other people on the way. It has been wonderful.
You must all be very tired.
Oh, not at all tired.
Not in the least.
I am rather tired.
Anyone who is tired is very welcome to take a seat in our carriage. Mrs. Musgrove?
Oh, no, not at all. I am perfectly capable of walking.
The Elliot pride could not endure to make a third in a one-horse chaise.
Well, if you are all very sure that no one would like to be driven home...
Sophia, may I speak to you for a moment?
It is such a touching friendship between brother and sister. Do you not think so, Mrs. Musgrove?
Oh, yes, indeed I do.
Miss Elliot, I'm sure you are tired. Do let us have the pleasure of taking you home.
Mrs. Croft, how kind.
Here is excellent room for three, I assure you.
I cannot accept.
You must. Indeed, you must.
Miss Elliot, please allow me to help you into the carriage.
Captain Wentworth?
Yes, Miss Elliot, do ride with us, and you can give us an account of the walk as we drive.
There is room for you, Miss
Look,
Elliot.
Look, we can compress ourselves into the smallest possible space to leave you a corner.
Take my hand, Miss Elliot. Let me assist you into the carriage.
Why, thank you, Captain Wentworth.
He had done it. She was in the carriage, and he had placed her there with his own hands. She understood him.
Bye.
Though he condemns me for the past, though perfectly careless of me and though becoming attached to another, still he cannot see me suffer without the desire of giving me relief.
It was a reminder of former sentiment. It was a proof of his own warm and amiable heart.
Which I cannot contemplate without emotions so compounded of pleasure and pain that I know not which prevail.
Frederick has been running after these girls long enough to make up his mind. This comes of the peace. If it were war, he would have settled it long ago.
How is that, Admiral Croft?
We sailors, Miss Elliot, cannot afford to make long courtships in time of war. I wish Frederick would spread a little canvas and bring us home one of these young ladies to Kellynch.
Ah, but which?
I do not think it matters. Very nice young ladies they both are. I hardly know one from the other.
Very good-humoured, unaffected girls, and a very respectable family. One could not be connected with better people.
Whoa there! Oh,
my dear Admiral, that post! Oh. We shall certainly take that post! Oh. Here, let me!
And by coolly giving the reins a better direction herself, they happily passed the danger. Anne, with some amusement at their style of driving, which she imagined no bad representation of the general guidance of their affairs, found herself safely deposited by them at Uppercross Cottage, where, in the silence of her own company, she contemplated the events of the day.
In part one of Persuasion by Jane Austen, Anne Elliot was Juliet Stevenson, Captain Wentworth, Tim Brierley, and Jane Austen, Sirica Cusack. Mary Musgrove was Catherine Herbert, Sir Walter Elliot, Roger Hume, Elizabeth Elliot, Claire Falconbridge, and Lady Russell, Patricia Gallimore. Admiral Croft was Geoffrey Dench, Henrietta Musgrove, Alison Dowling, Louisa Musgrove, Jane Dahl, and Charles Musgrove, Alistair Cameron. Mrs. Musgrove was Sheila Grant, Mrs. Clay, Hedley Nicklow, Sophia Croft, Tina Gray, and Mr. Shepherd, Stephen Hancock. Little Charles was John Abel, and Charles Hayter, Clive Marlowe. The square piano was played by Kenneth Mobbs. Persuasion has been dramatised for radio by Micheline Wandor, and was directed at Pebble Mill by Vanessa Whitburn.